At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. This is a special Best of Caller Questions InvestTalk compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. They will be played and answered on an upcoming InvestTalk podcast.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and take our first caller, Arlington from North Carolina. Hi, Arlington.
Hey there. Good afternoon, Steve.
Thanks for calling.
My question today is about interest rates. How long does it typically take for the Fed rate hike to impact company earnings? I'm asking this because it seems that this quarter's earnings weren't drastically affected by the increased rates. I saw that about three-fourths of the S&P 500 companies beat expectations. This led me to wonder how long of a time frame does it usually take for this things to kind of kick in into companies, you know, earning reports and whatnot?
Right. It takes 3 to 6 months. Remember, they started raising rates some time ago. So for that increase to start affecting earnings, we saw it affecting, even though they beat expectations, they still affected some of the earnings, especially depending on the sector. Going forward, of course, it's going to really hurt the housing sector. That's going to be the number one pain. Then, of course, any materials that support the housing sector, because interest rates are rise, meaning mortgage rates are higher, meaning people are not going to, you know, can't afford to buy a new house, and it's going to slow it way down, and it has already. So it takes 3 to 6 months for when the Fed start raising rates to filter into the system. And so they're still raising rates. So we're not done with what's going to, with the impact that it's going to have. We're not finished. Now, on the other hand, of course, now they spent $800 billion in this new act, so that will support certain sectors. So, you know, you just got to be careful what sectors you're going to pick. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Arlington.
Let's go to New York and talk to James. He wants to talk about home ownership.
I was wondering if maybe you thought there it was a wise time in general to invest in one's home. And in particular, I'm talking about curb appeal, say a new driveway or a new stonework on the front of the house. This is a year that I've increased my 401k contributions. Also, I was wondering if there is a percentage of one's income that might be wise to allocate on a renovation of one's home that I described.
Well, do you plan to stay in that home for a long period of time?
I do, yes.
Okay. Well, the cost of materials, the cost of labor is pretty high right now. So it's probably not the best time. Probably next year, later next year, will be a much better time. So I'd get a bunch of bids and do a lot of research. This is your time to make sure you're doing the right thing with the right contractor. Then you can make that decision. I wouldn't be in a rush to do it right now. But, you know, as the economy softens, as inflation comes down, there's going to be a better time, probably in the next 12 to 18 months, to get that done. And this is the time to do some research and get bids and kind of time that right. And, you know, unless you're in a hurry, which, you know, you're in there long term, I don't think you're in a hurry to, you know, do it so you can sell the house or anything like that. I would just be patient and be doing a lot of research right now. Thanks for the call, James.
Hello, InvestTalk. My name's Enrique from Pacific Beach. My question is, with the water shortages going on right now across the Southwest, especially Arizona, is it a good time to start picking up water companies, for example, like AWK or ETF like PHO or PIO? I look forward to your answer on the podcast. Thank you very much.
Well, on a long-term basis, I would say yes. I like the water sector because there's going to be more demand, and, you know, climate change is it's just going to make it more difficult to move water from one place to the next because the infrastructure has to move too, and that's very difficult and expensive to change, but these companies will take advantage of that. So I kind of like it for that reason. Now, AWK, American Water Works, is a $28 billion company. It's $158 a share, and it's going to make $4.80 next year. So you're talking about a 30 PE, so it's not cheap. I don't think the water, you're not the first one with this idea. So I think it might, you want to wait till these things go on sale. And they're not so far, even though the last two quarters, this company, AWK, American Water Works, last two quarters, sales have been shrinking. Earnings have gone up about 4 to 9%, and sales have shrunk 5 to 6%. So that's not a good formula at this point. So I think I like the idea of long term, but I'd wait for, you know, a pretty dramatic lowering of price. It's too expensive. Too expensive for me. You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
In today's world, a variety of factors are affecting the stock markets. Serious investors know building a secure financial future requires hard work and determination. That's why now, more than ever, when it comes to the planning, execution, and maintenance of your portfolio, you need InvestTalk. With total downloads nearing 50 million, each InvestTalk podcast should be one of your key financial planning and educational tools. InvestTalk is a free download. And hosts Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to provide their unbiased guidance and professional analysis developed from real-time data research and years of investing experience. 24/7, rain or shine, during smooth sailing or on rough weather days, the InvestTalk listener line is open and waiting for your questions. You set the agenda. Don't forget to call. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hey, this is Jeff from Montana. I've been listening for a few years. I want to thank you guys for all that you do. I'm 25, just opened a Roth IRA, and already have my own portfolio on TD Ameritrade made up of about 30 different stocks. I wanted to know what you guys would recommend for the Roth IRA, whether I should go the same route and use the same percentages in my current portfolio, or if I should go a different route and invest in ETFs such as mid-cap, small-cap, value, or the S&P 500. I also wanted to know if you guys would recommend contributing the max $6,000 each year to the Roth. Looking forward to hearing your answer. Thanks.
Well, if you're allowed to contribute $6,000 to the Roth based on your income, I would probably do that. And if you're already doing the work to build a portfolio of 30 different names that are well diversified and doing well, I don't see why that wouldn't apply to a Roth IRA too. Now, if you want to create broader diversity and not have to do a whole lot of work, you know, you could use ETFs and just simply index. But you're already doing the work. If you have confidence in yourself and your process, then I would go with individual names, because I think that's always better if you know what you are doing. Thanks for the call.
Hello, Justin and Klein. Thank you, and I love your show. I listen every day. This is Allah from the Middle East. My question is, can you name for me the best low-risk ETF to put my money on, rather than keep the money in the bank? On my account bank, I consider your opinion. Thank you so much again, and have a great day.
Okay, low risk means very little stock market exposure. So your low risk ETS is what you're asking about would be like an ultra short bond fund. That would be low risk. A little bit more risk would be just a short duration bond fund. Okay, well, that would have no stock market exposure. When you start getting any stock market exposure, you can't call it low risk anymore. it just means more risk. When we sit down and meet with people, we talk about it. Justin and I talk about risk and how much risk and how to judge what risk you're taking. And as you get older, you want low risk. You want lower risk. But I also suggest that you always have some exposure to the stock market, because that's the only way you're going to outperform inflation. Inflation is going to eat into your money. So what if the CD rates are going, maybe they'll be 4 and 5%, but if inflation's 8%, that's not going to help you. It's not. It means you're not even keeping up with inflation. So your money will buy less than 2, 3, 4 years from now than it can buy now. And even though it's growing, it's still buying less. The dollars are not buying what it should be buying. Got to stay up with inflation. Got to stay up with inflation.
The InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes.
I have a question for you about Amazon.
So your questions keep coming.
Question about P.E. ratios.
And that's okay, because Steve Peasley and Justin Klein specialize in unbiased guidance.
If I'm looking at a dividend company, I'm looking for consistency of earnings and dividends.
Your standard daily chart typically goes back 1 year.
Steve and Justin are fearless, so don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
James in Sonoma. How you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good. I wasn't going to call today, but you mentioned RMD, so I immediately ran to the phone. Okay, I'm going to be 72 next year, and unless Congress raises it up to 73, which I'm crossing my fingers, I'm hoping, I'm not going to need the money. So mine's a three-part question here. If I'm 72 and I can take the RMD, I assume I can take it anywhere in that year, because my birthday is way late in the year. It's in August. I'm assuming I could take it February 2nd if I wanted to. My next question would be, is there any advantage to taking and putting 500 shares of Honeywell from Part A? Because I don't need the money. And put it in Part B. In other words, transferring stock versus cash. And then my last question is, what do you recommend? What do most of your clients do? Do they take it early, take it late, do stocks? What do they do?
Most of my clients take their RMD at the end of the year. You have to take it at the end of the year. It's not based on your birthday. It's based on the year that you turn 70 and a half. And by the end of the year, you have to take the distribution. The other question you had, transfer stocks. You can take it any way you want out of your retirement account and put it into a regular account. You can do it via stocks if you want to transfer that amount of money that it represents to another account, and that's perfectly doable and allowable. And one other thing, did you know that the IRS is changing the tables for the RMD? In other words, what they're doing is, to our benefit, instead of using 82.4 years of a life expectancy, they're going to start using 84.6. So that means the amount of RMD the first year is reduced, because it's over a longer period of time. So that's a benefit to us. How much is not that great of a deal, but it's something. It's better than nothing. And I doubt seriously, James, that the IRS is going to extend another year. I don't see that happening. I really don't. And thank you for the call. I appreciate it. That was a good question. Thank you.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Okay, we're going to go to Paul in San Francisco. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good.
Thanks for the call.
I have a question about required minimum distributions. You're required to take them out after age whatever, 70 or something like that. And
72.
And then you have 27 years or something like that to get them all out. And so is there a maximum age that anybody can have any money in there? And that would be, I think, below 100 and somewhere above 95. Is that true?
You have to take your minimum distributions. They don't start until you're 72. We're talking about retirement accounts that, regular IRAs or regular 401ks, that you have to start taking the money out because the federal government wants your taxes on that money. That's the purpose. But they changed it from 70 to 72 a year or two ago, so you don't have to start taking minimum distributions until you're 72. And they extended the life expectancy a couple of years. So that means they'll be reducing the amount that they require you to take a little bit because you'll live longer. So you don't have to work it down to any specific number, Robert. They just make you take out a certain percentage every year based on the tables. So, you know, you could pass away or I could pass away having $1 million in our IRA. That could happen. So there's no, you don't have to take so much out, only based on their requirements of minimum distributions. And whatever's left is left. Okay? Thanks for the call.
Well,
appreciate it.
If I'm over 100.
No, the age has nothing to do with it. Whatever's left over is whatever's left over. By the time you're 100, they may have already required you to take most of the money out. Did they? You know, because of every year they make you take out a certain percentage. So if you're 100 and you have some left, that's surprising. That's great. Great news. But no, you don't have to take anything out. Just based on their tables. That's it. Appreciate the call. Thank you. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We want to answer your questions. Our listener line number is always ready for you. 888-99-CHART. Beginning our experience, we're here to answer your question.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Art in Tucson, who wants to talk about trailing stops.
Hello, Justin. It's Art from Tucson. Love the show. Thanks for all you guys do out there for us. I had a basic question on trailing stops, and basically, I want to know when it's appropriate to employ a trailing stop and if it's preferred to use a percentage or a point strategy for a trailing stop and why. And then what is considered a tight stop? I hear that term thrown around, but it's rarely defined by anyone in terms of a percentage, at least. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, great question. And the answer is always going to be a percentage wise, because some stocks trade for in the teens, other stocks trade for hundreds of dollars per share. So you never want to go buy, you know, down a dollar, up a dollar, because that can mean a lot of different things depending on what stock you're talking about. And then you never want to use a hard and fast number of 8% or 10%, because some stocks are very volatile or others are not so volatile. You know, Procter & Gamble, that's going to have low volatility. And so you probably want a smaller stop, 6%, 5%, something like that. Whereas, say you're trading Tesla, which can move dramatically in a short period of time, a 5% stop is going to get you stopped out very often. So a lot of it has to do with the historical volatility that you are, that the stock tends to move with. And so I don't like to use really those percentage numbers. I rather use the moving averages. So, as well as support levels. So stocks tend to move and find support or resistance at certain moving averages. And so when the character of the stock changes, meaning let's say it's in an uptrend and it tends to find support at the 100-day, and then suddenly it found support at the 100-day for a short period of time and then failed. Well, that means that stock is changing character, that maybe that long uptrend that it's been in is no longer in place or is being threatened. And that's when you want to think about exiting or reducing your position. And so that's what I rather use is a moving average. You could also use other support areas like previous breakout points. So a lot of times a stock will move up, it'll consolidate for a while, then it'll move up again. Well, it'll return back to that previous consolidation area and typically find support. That's kind of what you saw today in the markets. It hit its consolidation area from early July, and it found support. Now, if you start to break below that consolidation area, suddenly that kind of stair step higher, where you get a rally and a pullback and a rally and a pullback, you know, that's a healthy way a stock typically will move, and actually a very sustainable way a stock can move higher. Whereas, you know, if something moves quickly in one direction, oftentimes that dissipates rapidly. So it's more about the characteristics of the chart, and if those characteristics, those bullish or bearish characteristics, depending on if you're long or short, start to change. So that's what I would use. I wouldn't use a hard and fast rule. I would become comfortable with charting and utilizing those tools in order to help you understand the current trends in the market as well as individual names. Thanks for the call.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where they describe their services as independent thinking, shared success. And this philosophy is why KPP Financial can be of great value to investors. KPP principals Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are committed to unbiased guidance. They don't upsell clients into expensive and questionable investments. Instead, Steve and Justin provide honest opinions and proven strategies based on the individual's current portfolio and risk tolerance. Working with KPP Financial, you can be assured of consistent dedication toward the goal of helping you achieve financial freedom. You can get things started with a phone call or a simple message through investtalk.com. The InvestTalk radio and podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Herbert in San Antonio. Let's talk about earnings calls.
Hello, Justin. Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate your podcast. I listen to it diligently. My question today is on a company ticker symbol COD as in Delta I. And I was listening to an earnings call the other day, and basically they have $1.3 billion in debt. And the CEO was saying he has all of that debt locked in with unsecured bonds at 5.25%. What exactly does that mean?
Well, he's just saying that their debt doesn't need to be refinanced anytime soon. I don't know what their maturity schedule is. Doesn't sound like he talked exactly about that. But you know, the fact that corporate borrowing rates have gone up a lot with interest rates, and if you're locked in at 5.25%, that's a pretty solid rate compared to what most industrial companies are getting right now. And I think that's what he's talking about. That's good. If you are you know, a bit worried about their business and the fact that maybe you know, they might slow. It does look like it's slowing a bit. But it's just talking about their corporate debt structure and the fact that it isn't in imminent need of being refinanced at a higher rate and therefore a higher interest cost that would feed into their cash flow statements and their earnings statements, etc. So that's likely what he's talking about. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much for clearing that up. I just wanted to make sure I have been investing in this company for about 2 years. So just wanted to make sure that that was covered. But thanks again.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for the call.
You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. And you can get through right now.
At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne. HackerOne.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Now let's go to Eric in Virginia and wants to talk about gold and silver prices.
Hey, how's it going, Justin?
It's going well.
I'm calling because it seems like over the last year or so, the biggest headwind to gold and silver has been the rising dollar. Mm-hmm. Kind of my thought process would be that, at some point that's going to turn around. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, I'm also wondering if just the fact that, deglobalization is definitely playing into America's favor, in my opinion, with just the fact that we're set up better to be, independent from a lot of other nations versus, other nations aren't. Is that something that could potentially make the strong dollar last longer than maybe I thought it would?
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that we are more stable as an economy, we're a more diversified economy. We don't have to import a lot of raw materials, whether that's energy or soft commodities or other types of hard commodities. I think that's certainly true long term. We're set up fairly well, energy independent. We're the largest energy producer in the world, as well as we have a lot of deposits of, copper and uranium and all types of other minerals that are important, as well as ag. We're the largest agricultural exporter in the world, and so I think you are correct in that sense, especially if you compare it to the likes of Japan or China, who have terrible demographics, which we have pretty good demographics. So all of these things are setting up for America to be stronger on the other side of this, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be consistently strong. The dollar is going to go through its up and down cycles. Right now, we are tightening policy much faster than the rest of the world. The rest of the world trying to catch up with us. And then on top of that, we stimulated our economy to a large degree, and so that is all wearing off. And it means that our economy is moving back towards what the rest of the world's been doing, which is since the pandemic, which has been in more of a fits and starts type of process, where we had huge growth because in late 2020 and 2021 because of tons of fiscal and monetary stimulus. And so that's going to wear off in relation to the rest of the world by sometime middle part of next year. And I think that's something to consider in the medium term. And then the fact that inflation is likely to peak here in the back half of the year and come down pretty decently, especially in the first half of next year. So all of those things makes me think that the dollar is likely to be at a near term, intermediate term top. At least close to it. When we actually see that, we'll see. Maybe today was that first big reversal. But I do think that gold and silver are at a longer term bottom, especially if you zoom out and you look at the support levels, you look at the pattern. This is major support, and it's held it despite a strong dollar, despite higher interest rates. All those things should be should say that the gold and silver are gonna break down dramatically. And they're certainly down, but they're not falling off a cliff like you would expect them to do with those other headwinds. And so that relative strength is telling me that the longer term bullish setup that is within the precious metal space remains intact. And so long term, the dollar can go up and gold can go up. But obviously near term, that makes it a little bit more difficult. Thanks for the call.
Hey, my name is James. Just actually started listening to the program and impressed so far and happy with it so far. Just had a question about what to purchase at the moment and not wanting to invest in technology or any of those things. Is now a good time to buy commodities, or should a person wait for a while, give a little breathing room and see if commodity prices come down and then purchase at that point? Thanks. Bye.
Well, that's a good question, and I have a duplicitous answer. How's that? I would say yes and no. Are commodity positions that are pretty fairly priced, and I would definitely consider them, but I do think we may have another leg down, which will make them cheaper. I agree with your assessment about staying away from growth stocks. I do, and I've been saying that for all this year. And into last year. But value commodities, value stocks seems to be the play for the next year or two or three or even longer. And I would look for opportunities in that area. And you will get the opportunities. And there's some right now. Not a lot, but there's some.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where principals and InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are independent financial advisors. For clients, they are fiduciaries. Steve and Justin have a duty and a commitment to always place the interests of their clients ahead of the firm. This is different from the way many other organizations operate. And one way you can realize the benefit of an association with KPP Financial is to know that KPP practices parallel investing. This means that the personal investment accounts of KPP principals participate with client investments at equal prices and percentages. It's an important difference. You can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. Or reach out to Steve Peasley and Justin Klein by emailing or calling their Irvine, California office. The InvestTalk radio and podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with questions, 888-99-CHART.
Steve or Justin, Jason from Minneapolis. I have a Roth IRA question. If you're holding a stock at a significant loss, say down like 70%, or one of these high-tech stocks, if you're holding in a brokerage account, you know, you can always sell off those stocks to have offset your capital gains. But in a Roth IRA, you can't offset any losses. What is your guys' recommendation on a strategy? Do you just hold on to it and just wait? Maybe in 5+ years, you know, you'll recoup your money. Or do you just sell it and just kind of like, you know, throw that money away? What is your strategy on a Roth IRA with stocks with significant losses? I look forward to hearing your answers on the podcast. You guys do a fantastic job. I've learned a lot. I appreciate everything you do. Have a great night.
Okay, that's a pretty good question. So if you have a stock that's lost lots of value, do you get rid of it? Do you just say, okay, that's too much, I'm out? And the answer is not that simple. First of all, you ask yourself, well, why did I buy the company? What was about the company that I bought it? Did I buy it for the dividend? Did I buy it for growth? Did I buy it because it has a new product coming out? And so you should write those reasons down when you buy the company. This is why I own this company. Okay, here's my reasons. Now, if those fundamental reasons why you bought that company no longer are valid, then get rid of the stock. So let's talk about, you know, a high dividend paying big, huge blue chip stock paying, you know, when you bought it, paid 4.5% dividend. Now it lost over half its value. So the dividend's gone up dramatically as a percentage. They pay out the same amount of dollars and cents, but dramatically as far as percentage. Do you get rid of that stock? Well, if you just bought it for the dividend and you were just going to hold on to it because it pays a great dividend, no, you just hold on to it. If you bought a stock that's growth, you wanted to buy the stock because it was growing really fast, and it's still growing, but the market's beating it up terribly, you would still hold on to it if that reason still is there. It's still growing like it was. But let's say it stopped growing. Maybe competition is too hard. Then there would be a valid reason to get rid of it. So those are the – it just have to – it's just not because the price goes up or down that you sell a stock. That's not a valid reason to buy or sell a stock because the price went up or down. That's not valid.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go to Ken in Maryland. Let's talk about covered call ETFs.
Right. Are you familiar with those? And is that something you would buy for your clients in a portfolio?
Well, we run a covered call strategy ourselves. It's called Equity Income Plus, but we use individual stocks, just like an ETF would. But most of these ETFs are following some index. You know, we're leaning our clients towards energy, towards industrials, towards commodities, towards real businesses, and not story stocks, right? And we're buying in that strategy only dividend paying stocks, which most of these, when you're following an index, there's some dividend payers and some not dividend payers. So we like the idea of a covered call. It does moderate the volatility of an all equity portfolio. In great years, it will hold it back a little bit. In bad years, it will give you a nice hedge on the downside. In so-so years, oftentimes you'll beat the overall indices. But ultimately, it's about the underlying asset, because a covered call is you're buying 100 shares or 100 share increments of a stock, and then you're selling call options to bring in more premium to hedge on the downside, bring more income into the portfolio, et cetera. And if you do it right, like we do, then it will boost overall returns. But if you pick bad assets, it doesn't matter. So,
right.
So if you're,
what
if you're,
about these?
Good.
They have particular ETFs that play the indices on a covered call, where you're buying more than just one stock, and they put in the covered call for you on the ETF.
Who's? I mean, they're doing that. Like, for example, QYLD is one that I get called on a lot. That's the NASDAQ 100 covered call ETF. That's what they're doing. Right? They're owning the underlying NASDAQ 100, and then they're selling call options. And I'm not sure what there's a lot of different strategies on how you roll those options and manage those options, et cetera. I don't know exactly what they're doing. Underlying asset is the NASDAQ. And so if the NASDAQ goes down, I don't care how good your covered call strategy is, you're still going to lose money, right? So I'd rather run an individual strategy and run a covered call strategy than buy one of these ETFs. But is this better than owning the Qs itself? I would argue yes. Okay. So if you're apples to apples, right? The same index, non-covered call strategy or a covered call strategy, I'm picking the one that has the covered call strategy. But I wouldn't want to own the Qs, so I don't want to own it in either instance. Thanks for the call. Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, we like to thank them for their courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. Puma51 says, I've been saving and working at a down payment for a house, and obviously no one can predict the future, but what do you think about the outlook might be for housing market for 2023-24? I'm 26, I live in New Hampshire, and it seems every house is up here is overpriced and much older. I would be very patient. Typically, housing markets run in 3-4 year cycles, and we've just started the down cycle. We're probably 6 months into it. So I'd be extremely patient, especially if mortgage rates stay in the 5-6 range. That's going to mean we're going to reset our prices nationally back to 2017-18 levels. So I think we're going to make a round trip from the COVID bump in a lot of markets with rates where we're at now. Mm-hmm. So I'd be patient.
Oh, hey, Justin. Hey, Steve. Thank you for your show. Just love it. This is Tom calling from Oregon. Had a quick question. In your show previously, you've mentioned that general rule of staying away from IPOs within the first 6 months. I was just curious if that rule also applies to ETFs and mutual funds. Thank you. I look forward to hearing your answer on the show. Bye.
Well, I don't say that you should avoid IPOs in the first 6 months. What you worry about is the lockup period that usually lasts 6 months. So after the first 6 months, that's usually when you get more pressure on the stock downward. In the short term, when IPOs hit market, as long as they're sufficiently hyped and that hype stays up there, the stock tends to kind of hold water because there isn't a lot of new supply of shares coming on market. Now, with that caveat, I will say that most IPOs are overpriced, and so you're probably paying too much for those IPOs long term in those first 6 months. But typically, I just probably wouldn't touch most IPOs for the first year until you get some chart history, some trends, some multiple quarters of the business, and those insiders selling. So that's on the IPO front. Now, when it comes to ETFs, mutual funds, I guess IPOs and ETF coming to market, historically, it's a very bad time to invest in new funds, ETFs that come on board, especially those that are focused on a particular subsector of the market, right? Think of robotics and AI and things that are very hot. And because typically these ETF, these fund companies are only coming to market because they they need assets to sustain that fund. And they're only going to come to market when a lot of investors are ginned up to bet on that particular sector or subsector. And if you just look back in history, a lot of them, if you look ones that have been out for 5, 10, 15 years, they peaked early on because those fund families issued it when that was a hot sector and they were very overvalued. Like, you know, the companies within them were already overvalued. So typically you want to avoid those as well. Now, broad-based ones, that might be different. Ones that are focused a little bit more on, you know, quant strategies where you're over and underweighting certain aspects of particular companies, things like that. Those I worry less about. The ones that are very thematic, those are the ones that you definitely want to avoid, especially early on. And if you see a bunch of them hitting the market and you own those individual names in your portfolio, you should start thinking twice about the names that you own. Thanks for the call.
Now, if you have a question about a stock or an IRA, college savings plan, well, maybe buying a house, mortgages, reverse mortgages, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Ed Bravo. I really like the show. I really appreciate you guys and all the information you guys share. What are your thoughts on these cannabis companies, investing in them? Thank you for your time. You guys have a great day. Bye-bye.
Well, I do think cannabis is another area of future investments because, you know, that area is just growing very fast. And there's a lot of merger and acquisitions going on in that industry. So you're going to have to be careful where you are and try to pick one of those companies that are going to be acquired because they usually jump up when that happens.
Let's grab another voice bank question that came in earlier from Atlanta.
Hi, this is Ari in Atlanta. I'm actually calling because I wanted to include my daughter, she's 15, in investments. But I don't know how I should get her started, so just wanted to put a question out. Thanks. Bye.
Well, the first thing I would say is if she has a job, I would try to open up a Roth IRA for her if she can. She doesn't have to actually fund it. But if she can just have a little bit of a job, earned income, whatever that is, you can put that money into a Roth IRA account. Okay. So I would think about that if you can. And having a little part-time job, not a bad thing. I know it might be a little harder than usual right now, but I think that'd be good for her. Next, if that's not the case, she doesn't have a job, then just I would open a brokerage account for benefit of maybe her name. Now, Steve and I differ a little bit on new investors. I always think, especially in today's world, now with no commissions, it's easy to put a few hundred dollars in, get them used to investing. And I like to invest in individual companies. Steve would probably say indexing, but I like the individual company route because it allows young investors to start to understand how companies work, invest in the companies that they like, right? Maybe they're on TikTok a lot and they want to buy Oracle, right? Maybe they're on Instagram and they want to buy Facebook, right? Maybe they have an iPhone, they love Apple, they want to buy Apple. And it gets them a little more involved and connection to stock market and then the real life things that are happening. So that's the way I would get them started and start to learn, but with a very small dollar amount.
Hello, Noah from Hawaii. Thank you, first of all, for the excellent, excellent podcast you put out. My goodness gracious. You enrich us with your entertainment and and the education that you give us on all the financial matters. Thinking about utilizing a certified financial planner, a fiduciary, to manage my my retirement funds, and I want to know the correct, proper questions to ask them to research that company or a particular company. Should I ask them about their annualized return for low, medium, and high-risk portfolios? Should I ask them about their ratings within the industry? And third, should I ask them about their fee structure based upon a dollar amount invested with their firm? Appreciate your answer, and I look forward to it. Take care, and aloha from Hawaii.
Okay, CFP, Certified Financial Planners, are a good start, but the first major question when you're talking to a financial planner is how they get paid. Because they're not investors. They don't invest things. They more advise you what to buy. And generally, they're telling you to buy insurance and buying mutual funds and buying annuities, things that cost money to you but makes them high profit. So that's the first most important thing in my mind is how he gets paid. If you pay him on the hour because he's giving you advice, I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with him getting paid. Don't think I'm not. But a lot of times it's obscure because he's getting commissions and back-end commissions from things, so he or she. Also, if they're recommending a custodian of your money, you know, like Schwab or Fidelity, Vanguard, I don't care who, Goldman Sachs, make sure it is insured, okay? FDIC, that is the insurance for banks. SIPC is insurance for custodian of investment accounts. You want a large, safe, insured custodian. That's really important. Very, very important. Madoff, who stole those billions of dollars, his company was the custodian, and it was not insured. Okay? And, of course, you mentioned it. You want them to be a fiduciary. You want them to have the fiduciary responsibility. We are, KPB Financial is, and that is important that you get it. So those are the kinds of questions. You know, performance, if he's a financial planner, he's not managing accounts. So, you know, his performance would be whoever he's telling you to go to for performance, whatever assets he's telling you to buy. So, good questions, though. Very good questions.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.